I'm thankful for the opportunity to be here with you today. I know that this is a difficult time for you as a congregation, and certainly I'll be praying for you. You need to be praying for this church. As I looked around today, there are a number of people that I miss and that you miss. And it's okay to say that to one another and to them, that you've missed them. Certainly we need to continue to pray and hope that there can be great unity, love, and restoration of this congregation. As you can tell, I'm struggling with a little allergy, as most people are, I guess, for this time of the year. But I am thankful for the prayer that Dayton led. Becky took a fall last Saturday night and had a concussion, had to stay in the hospital for a night. And she's recovering, but it's a little slower than she wants it to be. And Lord willing, she'll be with us next Sunday. So we're hopeful for that. One of the symbols of America's freedom is the eagle, as all of us know. And I'm sure that you're also aware that if it had been up to Benjamin Franklin, it would have been the turkey. I'm glad it wasn't the turkey. I don't have to tell you that this is the flag of the state of Texas. It's a great symbol of freedom to all Texans. Texas was once a sovereign nation. There are some that would like for it to be again, but there was one time that it was. When Mexico became an independent country in 1821, Texas became a Mexican state. And after a successful war of independence against Mexico, the Texans raised the Lone Star flag over their own republic in 1836. In 1845, Texas accepted annexation by the United States and was admitted to the Union as the 28th state. The present flag was adopted in 1839. 3 years after the establishment of the Republic of Texas. It shows, obviously, the influence of the American flag. And this flag remained the official Texas flag after the Republic became a state in 1845. You probably don't have to be told what this picture depicts. It shows Marines raising the U.S. flag atop Mount Suribachi on the island of Iwo Jima during World War II. The Iwo Jima assault cost the Marines about 20,000 casualties, the highest toll of any single engagement in their history. A bronze sculpture depicting the scene and honoring all Marines stands in Arlington National Cemetery. The U.S. flag is another symbol representing our freedom as a nation. The essential design of the American flag can be traced to a resolution passed by the Continental Congress on June the 14th, 1777. And that resolution stated the flag should represent the 13 original states with 13 alternating red and white stripes and 13 stars on a blue field. The Congress assigned symbolic meanings to the colors. White signifies purity and innocence. Red signifies hardiness and valor. And blue signifies vigilance, perseverance, and justice. From 1795 to 1818, the U.S. Congress reduced the number of stripes to 13 and established the policy of adding an additional star for every new state. The design was not standardized until 1912. We know that the current flag dates from 1960, when a 50th star was added for Hawaii, the 50th state. Now, I went through all of that to tell you that there were banners, flags, in Bible times as well. And we can look at Isaiah, the 11th chapter, beginning in verse 10. In that day there shall be a root of Jesse, and of course that is a reference to Jesus Christ, who shall stand as a banner to the people. For the Gentiles shall seek him, and his resting place shall be glorious. It shall come to pass in that day that the Lord shall set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people who are left. From Assyria and Egypt, from Pathros and Cush, from Elam and Shinar, from Hamath and the islands of the sea. He will set up a banner for the nations and will assemble the outcast of Israel and gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth. So flags were important in the Bible times also. We can also read in Isaiah chapter 62, verses 10 through 12. Go through the gates. Prepare the way for the people. Build up the highway. Take out the stones and lift up a banner for the peoples. Indeed, the Lord has proclaimed to the end of the world. Say to the daughter of Zion, surely your salvation is coming. Behold, his reward is with him and his work before him. And they shall call them the holy people, the redeemed of the Lord, and you shall be called sought out, a city not forsaken. It's obvious that my transition from the program that I use to Microsoft has not been very good. What is a banner? Well, in this passage, the banner is an ensign or flag. And throughout history, people have long had banners around which they have certainly rallied. The Israelites had their own family standards, and even though that is a different Hebrew word, it still indicates a flag or a banner around which the 12 tribes rallied. And so the 12 tribes, when the tabernacle was moved, they would camp around the tabernacle, and each tribe had their own banner or their own standard. Every one of the children of Israel shall camp by his own standard beside the emblems of his father's house. They shall camp some distance from the tabernacle of meeting. And whether they were referred to as flags or banners or standards or ensigns, they were for the purpose of communicating information and gathering troops together, or a central rallying point. Isaiah demonstrated God's anger with his people who called evil good and good evil, according to Isaiah chapter 5 and verse 20. It almost sounds like America today, doesn't it? The prophet declared that if God's own people would not respond to him, then he would call the troops from other nations and other armies to fight under his banner. In Isaiah chapter 5, verses 25 through 26, "Therefore the anger of the Lord is aroused against his people. He has stretched out his hand against them and stricken them, and the hills trembled. Their carcasses were as refuse in the midst of the streets. And for all this, his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still. He will lift up a banner to the nations from afar, and will whistle to them from the end of the earth. Surely they shall come with speed swiftly." It's kind of hard to imagine God whistling, isn't it? But just as he is depicting that he can call anybody that he needs to carry out his will. And God obviously prefers that his own people carry out his will. But if his own people don't do it, he will find those who are not his people to carry out his will. God will always have an army rallying around him. The Lord is the banner for Christians today. In Isaiah chapter 11 and verse 10, "In that day there shall be a root of Jesse, who shall stand as a banner to the people. For the Gentiles shall seek him, and his resting place shall be glorious." Certainly when we think of the root of Jesse, we know that this again is a reference to Jesus Christ. And he made another reference to the root of Jesse in Isaiah chapter 11, verses 1 through 3. "There shall come forth a rod from the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and of the fear of the Lord. His delight is in the fear of the Lord." That day, referred to in Isaiah chapter 11 and verse 10, has a reference to the last days or the last dispensation, the Christian dispensation, when the church of Jesus Christ was prophesied to be established. And that again was prophesied in the book of Isaiah, in Isaiah chapter 2, verses 2 through 3. "Now it shall come to pass in the latter days," last dispensation, "that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains, and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow to it. And many people shall come and say, 'Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways, and we shall walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem.'" And we know that this refers to the church, and how that the church began in Jerusalem, as recorded in Acts chapter 2. So that's where the beginning was, and that's the great prophecy that was made some 800 years before Jesus came on this earth and then died and the church was established. Isaiah talked about the Gentile or the heathen nations who did not even know Jehovah God at that time. But in the last days, days in which we live, both Gentiles and Jews would assemble together and worship the Lord. And the Lord would be the banner for whomever would come to him. You know, just as there were 12 flags around which the Israelites rallied, There is also an ensign around which Christians rally today, and it is the cross of Calvary. In John chapter 3, verses 14 and 15, as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life. Christ is the one who was lifted up. It wasn't a flag. It wasn't something that we might wear on our lapels or chains around the neck. It was a cross on which he died, a cross on which he died for you and for me. And that's the great rallying point of God. In John chapter 12, verses 31 through 33, now is the judgment of this world. Now the ruler of this world will be cast out. And I, if I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all peoples to myself. This he said, signifying by what death he would die. Can you imagine knowing how you were going to die? Knowing the pain that would be inflicted on you. And yet Jesus knew that. He knew that from the moment that he left heaven, that he came to live a perfect life and to die for you and me. He knew it was going to be extremely painful. He did not look forward to the pain, but yet again, with the joy that filled his heart, he looked forward, the Hebrew writer says, he looked forward to dying for you and me. That's the only way that we could have salvation. That's the only hope that we have. And he was willing to sacrifice himself for us. For sinners. You know, the Lord is the standard who can unite all people, regardless of their race, regardless of their status in life. He can bring them together into one army to fight against God's arch enemy, Satan and his followers. Jesus destroyed the social and the racial barriers between people when he died for all mankind. Notice what Paul wrote in the book of Ephesians. He himself is our peace, who has made both one and has broken down the middle wall of separation, having abolished in his flesh the enmity, that is, the law of commandments contained in ordinances, so as to create in himself one new man from the two, thus making peace, and that he might reconcile them both to God in one body through the cross, thereby putting to death the enmity. And he came and preached peace to you who were afar off and to those who were near. For through him we both have access by one Spirit to the Father. It's amazing when you read through the book of Ephesians how often Paul refers to oneness, the one body, the one Lord, the one God, the one baptism. And here he's referring to his body, the church, as one. And that's exactly what God intends for it to be. I don't know about you, but when I watch the news, I often get depressed. When I think about our country as it used to be, and as it is now, it certainly concerns me. When I think that we have a division in our country almost right down the middle, that bothers me greatly. We certainly need to be praying for our nation, that we can become one nation under God again. When I read and hear the things that people on one side of the political spectrum says about another side of the political spectrum, I wonder, are we really living in America today? The land of the free, the home of the brave. And I think that we need to make that application to the church. A nation that is divided will fall. And we know that. I believe that if we continue in the same direction in which we are traveling at the present, our nation will eventually fall. The only way that she can be saved is by a massive turning back to God. I pray that that will happen. When I think about this church, when I think about the history and how it has stood out very positively within this community, think of the precious souls that are here this morning. You are precious people to me. We appreciate so much. Dayton was talking about, played a small part in praying for Becky and her healing. No, you played a large part in that. You played a large part in praying for Michael and his healing. Many others. We think about the oneness and the unity, and right now there's a lot of pain and a lot of hurting because of the disunity. And it's so unfortunate to me that in times like this that people in the Lord's church, the Lord's body, where we're to be rallying around the flag of Christ, the banner of Christ hanging on the cross, that we might be hanging on other things. And I know, I've been on both sides before, and it's painful. I can't give you a magical answer. But God can give you a godly answer. I think that you continue to pray, that you continue to do what you have done in the past that is good and is right and stand up for truth. I think if you begin to divide and fight among yourselves, that you're going to lose what you have. I think you're going to have to stay together. You're going to have to love one another more than you've ever loved one another in your lives. And I think you're going to have to express love to those who have left and those who have hurt you and those who feel that they have been hurt by you. I think that's the only way that the church can become one body. They are still our brothers and sisters. And we still love them. And we miss them. I also know that during times like this, there are times that some people may say things that probably would be left better unsaid. Or they may have attitudes that are not as Christ-like as they should be. They may take actions that if they had thought them out, they probably wouldn't take. Because it's always a hurtful time, just like within a family, because we are the family of God. We are the family of Jesus Christ. When a family member leaves, we hurt. Sometimes when a family member leaves, we say things or do things or act in ways that we shouldn't. And I hope that that's not indicative of any of you here, and I don't believe that it is. But there are certainly to be a unity in the body of Jesus Christ. And isn't it a shame that even though we declare this great unity in the body, we keep splitting and dividing so that we're not as strong as we used to be? What can we do about that? Well, we can do what the Lord said to do. We can go out and make converts to Jesus Christ. We can grow. We can exemplify the attitude of Christ and the spirit of Christ to others so that they can see Christ living in us individually and collectively. That's what we can do. And that's what I call on you to do today. You be the church. That we not rally around a minister. We not rally around elders necessarily. But the main focus is that we're rallying around the cross of Christ. Amen. And as he holds up that banner and that flag for us, that we come to him and realize that we are serving him and not serving other things that may get in the way. I call on you to do that today. I call on you, if there is any need at all for anyone who is here today to become a Christian, to be baptized into Jesus Christ, that you take this opportunity today. It's the only one you have. That you take this opportunity today to give your life to Jesus. I call on you if you have sinned against God, against your brothers, against anyone, that you make it right. And that we move forward from today. As we sang just a few moments ago, there's a royal banner given for display to the soldiers of the king. As an ensign fair, we lift it up today, while as ransomed ones we sing. Over land and sea, wherever man may dwell, make the glorious tidings known. Of the crimson banner now the story tell, while the Lord shall claim his own. When the great commander, from the vaulted sky sounds the resurrection day, then before our king the faint and foe shall die, and the saints shall march away. Marching on, for Christ count everything but loss. For the King of Kings will toil and sing beneath the banner of the cross. God has called his people from every race and every nation to be in his army. And when God's army rallies around the cross, the banner of Christ, none of his enemies will be left standing. If there's anyone this morning who needs to respond to the invitation of our Lord Jesus Christ, and that's whose invitation it is, it's not mine, it's the Lord's, then we ask you to come while we stand and sing.